I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. This is a new episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. Thank you for listening. Hope you're doing well. An animated movie I have heard about for a long time. Maybe you have as well. It's finally here. Animal Crackers, new animated feature, all-star cast, debuting Friday, July 24th on Netflix. Joining me right now are the directors Tony Bancroft and Scott Christian Sava. Guys, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, hey. Thanks, man. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
You're welcome. There is so much to talk about with this movie. Either you can jump in at any time with any of these questions. The first thing that I want to mention, and I saw that you guys noticed my posts on this on social media the other day, in May of 2017, I interviewed Gilbert Gottfried. He came to town. He came to near where I live to do his comedy show. I asked him about his voice role in this movie, and I got to see him after the show and gave him a box of animal crackers. He said to me, you know, he came in, he did his voice performance. He then had no idea what was going to happen with the movie. Either you guys can jump in. Take me from that point of May and June of 2017 to where we are now.
Oh, my gosh. Scott, you take it away, buddy. You go
thanks.
Have fun.
Well, first of all, Gilbert was a dream to work with. He was amazing. Tony got to do Iago with him, right?
Yeah. We go way back to Disney's Aladdin. That's when I first met him and worked with him.
Yeah. He was so fun. And, it's funny because, he joked a lot about the fact that, you know, we were trying to get him to play an Italian, and we gave him some weird stuff to say, but he really helped change that character because the character initially didn't really have a voice until Gilbert came around, right, Tony?
Yeah, no, he really didn't, and he was it all takes place in a circus, the whole movie, so a lot of the villains and the henchmen of the villains are all acts in the circus. So Gilbert plays this character named Mario Zucchini, who is this, stunt driver, motorcycle, you know, those guys that do that crazy thing where they go around in circles in a ring or something like that with their motorcycles. He plays one of those kind of guys, but he's like, I love the character design. We had Carter Goodrich, who's this all-star character designer, and he made this character design of Gilbert's character, and he's really short on this huge motorcycle. He's got this outlandishly large, like, stunt motorcycle, and he's very skilled on it, and it's just, the whole concept to me is just hilarious. And then when you throw in Gilbert Gottfried, come on.
Yeah.
You'll make it joyful, yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun. I mean, I think my initial writing of Mario Zucchini had him just saying random, because, you know, I'm half Italian, I'm half Sicilian. I don't know any Italian. So I just had him saying stuff like Monica Bellucci, you know, Fettuccine Alfredo, you know, just yeah. whatever, anything that sounded Italian. And that was his whole dialogue. And I remember Tony was working with the story team, and Tony, I don't know, who was it? Was it you or Scott who did his dialogue? But we got it back. We're like, this just isn't funny. It's kind of racist, maybe.
It's repetitive racism is what it was. So
yeah.
We went in a different direction altogether. Yeah.
Okay.
We put our thinking caps on, and we came up with the idea of him just kind of talking in the third person, you know, like he's narrating his own movie.
Right.
And fortunately that's what Gilbert got. And he just took it and just was Gilbert. But yeah, that was amazing. And that was, God, Tony, we recorded that in early 2015 in New York,
and here's the thing, Jackson, this is going more directly to your question, I think, is that, you know, they always say there's three elements of making an independent animated movie, any kind of independent movie, that are hard, right? And any two of them are crippling usually and then destroy your movie altogether. But they are, first, getting an investment, right? Which went actually, I mean, Scott can speak to that, but fairly easy comparatively. That's usually the hardest thing, right?
Yeah.
Getting millions and millions of dollars from investors to make a crazy animated film. That went, got it. Usually then the second thing is making the production. Okay, you got to put together a team of all these great artists, usually an international team, a lot of coordination there. A lot of things could go wrong along the way, or you could run out of money. We did that. Happened. Had some bumps and, you know, bumps and bruises along the way, but overall that went well. Distribution is the third thing. Having it be able to get out into the marketplace is so key. Usually that's the easiest part. That because you have a movie, especially with us, we had a movie that was done in 2017.
So when we did one Gilbert and two.
Godfrey, yeah. When you met Gilbert Godfrey, he didn't know what was going on because we didn't know what was going on. We were like in this world of like, this doesn't make sense. We have this all-star cast, right? You know it. And we'll talk more about them, but all-star cast, great animation, fun family film. Why isn't this happening? Why aren't we getting out there in a larger way? And the short of it is that we went through all kinds of trials going with smaller independents. We had the bigger distribution companies that gave us really lousy deals. And then the smaller independent distribution companies that were, really favorable. And we're going to do this. We're going to get it out there in so many theaters. They went out of business. We had two or three of those. One of them sued us. It was just a nightmare for three long years, particularly on Scott Sabba's back. I don't think Scott has had a good night's sleep in 3 years, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a full head of hair at the beginning of this.
And this is a podcast, so you can't see that he's completely bald.
But yeah, no, it was I was going to say hair raising experience, but it was definitely, we thought getting one and two done meant that number three was automatic, and it wasn't. And really what it came down to was the larger studios wanted to own the film completely, which didn't favor our investors. And the smaller studios that gave us favorable offers and favorable deals couldn't raise the money to market the film properly. And in doing so, they wound up going bankrupt. So it was just, we were kind of caught in the middle because, and I think, Tony, you remember when we first started the film, before the cast came on, we were just thinking it was going to be a direct to DVD, just a small, my first film. It was just a small endeavor. Mm-hmm. But when the cast just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger,
they kept saying yes. That's the problem.
Yeah.
We had our wish list, and all of our wish lists came true. It was incredible.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's an unbelievable stunned. Cast. Yeah.
But yeah. So
Let's lay it down for your listeners too. Emily Blunt. Okay. John Krasinski, so man and wife together playing man and wife for the first time. This is well before A Quiet Place. That's when we recorded them so many years ago. It was their first time working together. Gilbert Godfrey, Patrick Warburton, Sylvester Stallone, Ian McKellen sings a song in it too. Oh my gosh. Raven Simone. We had Wallace Shawn. Who am I forgetting here, Scott?
Danny DeVito.
Dave DeVito, of course. Yeah.
It is amazing. But I guess with this Netflix deal happening, I mean, was it very recently? And what was the day like for you guys when Netflix, one of the biggest streaming services out there, one of the biggest places right now to have your movie be shown, said, yes, we are in on Animal Crackers?
It was amazing. It was amazing. I mean, after everything we'd been through, I don't know, kind of like a white knight kind of coming, Gandalf at the last hour, you know, in white, saving the day. It really was magical. But we also, at the time, because this was the beginning of the year, we had no idea what the landscape was going to be. And, you know, I keep joking with Tony. I said, could you imagine if it wasn't Netflix who saved us and it was another studio and we were going to release the film theatrically this summer? It would have been yet another tragedy. So the fact that with the landscape, we feel like it all worked out for the best. Like it was providence, you know, it really, we can't thank them enough. And we, you know, they've been so supportive of us and as creators, and we're just so excited. I mean, all of the fans that have been waiting for 6 years, you know, now they can see it in the next 3 weeks. It's amazing.
Yeah. You would have been in limbo. I mean, you would have been in this limbo period if you were with a studio that wanted you to be in theaters, because who knows when the theaters are going to open at this point. Well, what's going to happen?
I'll give you a perspective on that, Jackson. The last premiere I went to in Hollywood, I was invited to go see Mulan, They had a big Hollywood premiere for the live action Mulan because I directed the first one. And it was the last big thing, but people were talking about coronavirus through the whole premiere that whole night. There was this kind of tension, but nobody was wearing masks. Nobody was social distancing. It was the last big, you know, hurrah. And actually probably kicked off the coronavirus in LA probably. But then, you know, they're all triumphantly talking about, oh, it's going to come out. And that was like, this was like 2 weeks before it was supposed to come out. I think in March originally it was supposed to be out.
Yeah.
And then that got pushed. And now and this is just something that's very relative to me because I remember going to that premiere. It got pushed once. Mulan was going to come out again this month. It got pushed again. Now it's coming out in August. I just think about that roller coaster from the perspective of a movie that I'm close to. That could have been us for sure. Yeah. That would have been us. I mean, we would have been just push. Who knows? I feel like there's like an airstrip of great movies that are all going to come out in the same month. And we would have been in that, you know, we'd have been in that congestion, you know?
Yeah. John and Emily's A Quiet Place Too got pushed back as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. As of this recording, it'll be out Labor Day weekend. Who knows if that changes between now and when you're all listening to this right now, but you get to watch Animal Crackers July 24th on Netflix. When it comes to Emily and John, I have met Emily. I've spent time with her on several occasions. She is absolutely lovely.
Sweet. Yeah,
did you always know you wanted them to be the husband and wife main characters in this film?
No. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, no, that is a funny story, and I will forever be humiliated for this. But so the way that it went was we were nobodies, you know. I was a nobody. Sorry, Tony was always somebody. But as a film production company, the agents were looking at us going, well, who are you? Who are you? You know, we've never, you know, we don't know if you could even make a film. But one day, magically, Ian McKellen said yes. And when he did, it kind of opened the floodgates because it lent credence to our film. And Stallone and DeVito. And so the whole cast filled up except for the two leads, Owen and Zoe. We looked around, and nothing was right. And Jamie Thomason, our casting director, said, you know, I'm going to run a name by you. He says, John Krasinski. I said, I've never heard of him. He says, you've never seen The Office? And this is 2014, so please give me a little bit of credit. It was 2014. I'd never heard of him. And he says, well, he's really funny. And I said, okay, I'll trust you. For the female lead, he picked Kaley Cuoco. I said, never heard of her. He says, Big Bang Theory. Never seen it. Okay, well, that's your two leads. Okay. So beginning of 2015, I fly out to Nashville. Tony's there. John Krasinski's there. We meet him. He's great. Kaley Cuoco doesn't show up. Just doesn't show up. So we're like, oh, okay. So we record. Next day we did Raven Simone and Danny DeVito. Everything went good. I go home. A couple weeks later, next session, I come out. John's there. Kaylee's not there. Mm. Third time I come out, John's there. Kaylee's not there. And we had to let her go. I'm like, oh my God, this is my first movie. I just had to fire somebody. You know, I was so nervous. Tony, as always, was chill. But
let me just jump in and just say, you know, it's not all Kaley Cuoco. You know, Kaley Cuoco's agent was playing a lot of games and, you know, wanting more money and things like that.
It's not her fault. We never got to meet her.
Sure.
Yeah.
What we heard was that she was very pleasantly in love with the script and wanted to do the part. So,
yeah.
All right. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Good job, Tony. So I was pretty upset, and I was in the recording booth with John. We were just waiting for everything to get set up. And John just, you know, offhand, just making chit chat says, hey, I just want to let you know, my wife just absolutely loved the script. She thought it was just adorable. And, you know, just kept talking on and on. And I was genuinely flattered. And I said, thank you. And after that, I walked out. Now, I didn't know who he was married to because I didn't know who he was.
Again, Scott did little to no research.
I did.
The rest of us are going, oh my gosh, he's talking about
Tony and Jamie are in the sound booth listening to this conversation going, and Jamie comes running out and you know, jumps in front of John and says, would your wife be interested in being in the movie? And I'm looking around going, what, you know, what's going on? He's just shushed me. And John goes, yeah, sure. So picks up his phone, goes, hey, babe, you want to be in the movie? A couple minutes later.
Text her right there in the session. And then we do some lines. And then Right after he does a couple lines, he comes back. Oh, I just got a text from my wife. She said she'd love to do it. And we were
celebrating.
And Scott's going, wait, but who did we hire?
Wow. That's amazing. Because, yeah, she had done Romeo and Juliet and was great with the voice work at that. And it's so lovely that you brought her on. We're able to have that because you listened to the two of them. Now, did they end up coming in together and doing a lot of their
Like every single time. Yeah.
Because they were magical together. The film, we had to go back and re-storyboard most of the film because of them, because their playfulness and their dialogue, they were making each other laugh every other line. They were adding new lines. They were singing songs. They were just like, there's a section where all I had written was the daughter of Mackenzie says, I'm hungry, and Zoe says, oh, there's a fruit stand. That was the only dialogue was Emily only had to say, there's a fruit stand. And we got a good, 45-second conversation of, you know, well, she's hungry. We'll check underneath the sunglasses. There's the, well, I think I left some food on the sunglasses. There's a fruit stand. And then they start singing.
Yes.
I like to eat apples and bananas. I mean, they did not rehearse that. They just started going back and forth and singing. And Tony and I are just sitting there with our mouths open going, oh my God. And I was like,
well, and they had this great shorthand where they would literally, like, in between takes, they're like, oh, you know what we should do? Let's do here. You go high and I'll go low. And let's do a little banter here. And then let's sing that song that we do for the kid. Cause I think they had just had, when we recorded them, they had just had a baby prior to that.
She was maybe a year old at the time.
So they were in this, they were new parents, and they were singing little songs. And this was one of the songs that they sang to their child.
Yeah, because you can tell how natural they are together and that playful nature. I could feel that. You can hear that as you're listening to them and through the characters. So it's one of the best decisions you guys made was to get the two of them together.
I had nothing to do with this whatsoever.
And it was the easiest casting in the history of animation, probably. I mean, literally, it was like a 5-minute thing. Hey, babe, you want to do this? And she wrote back, yeah, okay, sounds good. Yeah. And everything went smoothly after that. It was their first
film together, and they loved it so much, and we loved it so much. And I remember seeing them in London. The last time I saw them was we were doing the last pickups in the EPK. I think it was December 2017, and we had to fly out to London because she was getting ready for Mary Poppins at Pinewood, and so we did everything there. And I remember John telling me, he's like, yeah, we had such a good time. He says, I have a new script I'm writing called A Quiet Place that, you know, we were going to work together, you know, for live action. And we had such a good time doing that. And just looking back going, well, that was 2017. We were just finishing our film and they're already on their second one. Was already done. We're going, when will our film come out? So it was bittersweet, but it was really cool.
Yeah, you helped influence John casting Emily to be in A Quiet Place and making that happen. I think you guys deserve a lot of credit for that happening, and now everybody getting to hear them in this. The voice cast is incredible in Animal Crackers. Stallone, is it? I mean, who surprised you the most? Was it Stallone? Was it Ian McKellen doing the song? Who went the farthest with their character as far as this ensemble?
I mean, I'll answer for myself, which is I want to say Stallone amazed me that he took on the part, because now we came up with this concept for his character. He plays a guy that's shot out of the cannon, you know, in the circus, there's always a guy that's shot out of the cannon, the stunt guy, whatever. And we always wrote him and played him as if the backstory was that he probably hit his head way too many times. So he only says his name over and over again. Now, of course, in the process of making this film, there's been two films with Groot where he goes, what's the name of the...
I am Groot.
Guardians of the Galaxy, and he always says, right. I am Groot. Well, our character that Sylvester Stallone plays says Bullet Man all the time, his name. Yes. And he came in, and we thought, well, this isn't very challenging for him. All he says is Bullet Man through the whole movie. And then at there is, I don't want to spoil anything, but there is a little something extra at the end.
Yes, there is.
But he just basically says Bullet Man through the whole movie. And he was so thrilled to come in. He was so pleasant, so into it. He gave us, like, he just went through every single emotion of how you could say that his name, Bullet Man. You know, he did it sad and happy and excited, mm-hmm. and as a roar, as a cheer, as a, you name it, as a little cry and a whimper. We had everything within like an hour, and he was just the coolest guy.
And he did it all with a smile on his face. He did it just joyfully, and he was the nicest guy. He really was. Everybody warned us, you know, he's going to have an entourage, he's going to be distant, and he just came in with a cup of coffee and said, call me Sly, and just hung out. And they're like, shadow box.
The coolest people in the world, Sly. Hey, Sly. Yeah. And yeah, we're like shadow boxing with them and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good to hear. That's so good to hear. The directors of Animal Crackers, Tony and Scott, are with me right now in the LCJ Q&A. The interesting thing is, at one point in the movie, you have a montage, a sequence, and you do it to Freddie Mercury's Don't Stop Me Now. Now, this, again, this movie was made before Bohemian Rhapsody came out, and Rami Malek wins the Oscar, and this resurgence of Freddie Mercury, but you sort of called it in advance because of your incorporation. You do, with the Freddie Mercury song, what the Katy Perry firework sequence in Madagascar 3 does. You do that for a new generation here. How did you know, hey, we got to incorporate some Freddie Mercury in this?
I won't take any credit for that. That came from Jaime Maestro, who was our director in Valencia, Spain. It was just one of those things where the team in Spain was messing around and they picked the song, and it was perfect. And Tony and I were just like, yeah, this is really cool. This is a great song.
But we'll never get that Queen song.
Yeah, we'll never get it.
We're like, well, that's nice that you put it in for scratch and you timed it out exactly perfectly. And it's so entertaining now. Now we have to find a real song to put in there. But no, I mean, that's the great thing about, I'll give Scott a lot of credit here as the producer and the writer, is that Scott had, he's got this very anti-Hollywood way about him. You might get that a little bit from the fact that if you can see him right now, he lives in a hobbit hole that's styled after Lord of the Rings. And he lives there all the time. But he's kind of an anti-renegade kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, if somebody says, no, you'll never get that, or no, that's not going to happen, it usually means that's usually a challenge for him. So the fact that I was the one probably in this time going, oh, we're never going to get Queen, but wouldn't that be great? I mean, I love that. Of course, we grew up in the 80s, so we got all these 80s music and stuff like that in there. But that was all Scott going, you know what? Let's just try. Let's see what happens, you know? And
It never hurts to ask. We had a great
music supervisor that had a lot of connections too, which was really helpful. So yeah, they got it at an affordable price that our little budget could afford. And I still can't believe it's in there.
Yeah, the initial quote was like three times our entire music budget for all of the songs, and so we were told by our music supervisor, unless you could find an extra few hundred thousand dollars, you're not going to be able to do it. And I just said, well, can we send them the movie? We still were in storyboards. Maybe some shots were animated. Can we send Brian May and Roger Taylor the movie? And so he reached out and they said okay, and they watched it with their family. And a few weeks later we got the call saying, okay, you could have it for within your budget. So they lowered it like 80% discount, just so that way we could get the film, we can get the song in our film. And
I mean, I'll tell you, Jackson, I think that's the overriding story that you'll hear from us about the making of Animal Crackers, is that there was just these little miracles that would happen constantly. And it was because there was so much heart, I think, fueling this production that started with Scott Sava, this guy here, and his family. He poured, you know, this is his baby. This is one of those independent love stories where he poured his heart and soul into this. And all of us just wanted to support that. You know, I think the whole team that came about, but including the actors, I think they really felt there was a charm there in the script. So if you can, I mean, an actor's always going to look at two things, right? Well, what's it pay? But also, do I like this content? Is this something I want to be a part of? And we got him largely because of the second one. It was the content. And then a lot of times it was Scott telling his real story about, we've put our whole, you know, and usually his wife Donna would be with them when we were meeting with these actors and producers, director, you name it. And they would just tell him, we've put our whole life savings into this and mortgage the house and whatever, you know, that we're all in on this. This is a passion play. And people would just fall in love with the story and go, okay, we're in.
Wow. Yes. It is such an upbeat film. It is a positive film. It is a family story that everybody can enjoy. And the fact that you got Queen's approval to use the song is just, there are so many layers to this story. It is unbelievable. And I've loved being a part of this saga a little bit in the last 3 years with Gilbert, but to see the film now, yeah, it is amazing that it is here and it is fantastic. Tony, I want to shift just for a second, a little bit to Mary Poppins Returns, because
yeah.
I grew up with the first Mary Poppins, one of my all-time favorite movies, and I love how this second one turned out. When you look at that, which was, you're working on this in the middle of this, I guess, you're working on the two at the same time, and the fact that the legacy of Mary Poppins, was this one of the most pressure-filled times of your life?
Not so much, but it's funny because we were finishing up Animal Crackers when I got the opportunity and the call to go do some 2D animation. So I worked on some of the, you know, the animated aspects, the 2D animation aspects of Mary Poppins Returns, because that's my roots. I'm a 2D Disney animator. That's what I love. And so to be able to work on a Disney film, particularly something as reminiscent and special, just like you said, to me also as Mary Poppins and be part of that, I was so excited. But thankfully we were already wrapping up Animal, this is more like during the last, while we're in this, you know, distribution hell time period, I needed to work anyway. I needed a job. And so this came about, and I feel like it was very surreal for me though, because I would have images and photo stats and stuff like that on my drawing board of Emily Blunt. And I'm drawing all the animals behind her that are singing and dancing behind her. And so thinking about Animal Crackers, that she's our main character, and then now she's showing up in this, I felt like Emily Blunt was like stalking me for years now. For the last 5 years, she's been part of my life. And I'm a big fan of Quiet Place and all that, so I've seen all of her movies. But yeah, she's just all over. She's in my dreams now.
Whoa, yes. Whoa, getting deep there. But yeah, it's so cool. You pulled off that 2D animation with Mary Poppins Returns. It was a film I watched with my grandmother many a time. And if she was able to see the movie, I'm sure she would have loved it. And I loved seeing it. So thank you for what you were able to do to Mary Poppins Returns. And I so think that families are going to get really invested in Animal Crackers because, you know, I remember going to the circus when I was young, and yeah. I remember those experiences and seeing the animals. And in one of the sequences, Scott, you've got a montage in the film where Owen, John Krasinski's character, becomes a bunch of different animals by eating the different crackers, and he and Emily's character are working with Danny DeVito's character on all that. How was it deciding which animals at which times that Owen was going to become, and then creating those faces and those bodies?
I think it was all just based on what was the funniest impact, you know, that was always what we were looking for, was visually what was funny. I mean, Carter Goodrich was creating such amazing characters and such amazing animals that I hope we didn't break him with how many that he had to design. But, you know, it was so fun seeing them come to life. And so we were just, you know, seeing porcupines and flamingos and rhinoceros. I mean, stuff that isn't in a normal box of Animal Crackers, hamsters and stuff like that, you know. So we were just having fun with it. I think I keep telling Tony, you know, I keep reminiscing about how it was just pure creative bliss, you know, making the movie. We didn't have any rules other than the budget. And even then we kept bending the rules of that too. But yeah, you know, we just, whatever felt like it would enhance the film, we would do it. And Tony and I and the rest of the team would roll up our sleeves because we didn't have the budget, and we would do it ourselves lots of times. So it was fun. It was really fun.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. And Danny DeVito too, because this was before Dumbo came out. Cause I'm thinking, man, he's so into the whole circus world. Did you know he was working on Dumbo when you were working with him on this?
I'm trying to remember. Did we know about that? I think it was kind of quiet, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, all we knew is he was in that show, Sunny,
Right.
It's Always Sunny
in Philadelphia. Yeah.
But he was also in Big Fish. He was the ringleader.
That's true.
That as well.
Yeah. So he's got a love of the circus, clearly, to Dalby above, because he has that voice and he carries a lot of the movie too. And he has that strong voice, which is able to make that happen. So I really want to know, guys, are you getting animal crackers for life? Like, are they sending you the box?
I know. We should, right?
We should. You know, the funny thing is that animal crackers is such a generic term, like pizza or hamburgers. We've spoken to Nabisco, you know, and whatnot, but right now it's just, the movie's just based off of the book I wrote. So it's we wish we were getting free animal crackers. Actually, it's probably better for Tony and I that we aren't getting animal
crackers. I think I would have a sugar intolerance by now. Yeah. And my mom just, and I didn't tell you this, Scott, but my mom just bought a huge, big jar of animal crackers. I don't know where she found it, like on Amazon or something like that. And she says, I'm going to have an animal cracker every day until your movie comes out.
Smart mom's the best.
Like, thanks, mom. Dennis appreciates you too, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people are going to be surprised that this is based on a book and not just the cookie that we see. I mean, Scott, did one day you just, pick up the cookies and go, you know what? There's a world here.
Yeah, the cookies were the inspiration. I have twin boys. They were maybe around about seven years old at the time. And we were eating cookies in the backyard. And then just the idea came of, hey, what if you eat a lion cookie and poof, you become a lion? And, you know, eat a giraffe cookie and poof, you become a giraffe. And that became a game. And then I just wrote the idea down. And then probably months later, I turned it into a comic book. And then years later, I turned it into a movie script. So it was just a long process, I think, that started maybe around 2007, 2008. It was just one of those things. I showed the comic book to Tony. Tony really loved it. I showed the script to Dean Laurie, who wrote Arrested Development. Mm. He really liked it. It's been with us for quite a while. You know, it's been probably 13 years that it's been with us. But yeah, it did spring from the cookies.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's nice. So what is it going to be like for you guys? The movie comes out July 24. On July 25, after this idea being in your heads for so long and this movie being in limbo, and now what is Saturday, July 25th going to be like for the two of you?
I think we're sleeping in. I think we're getting a good night's sleep and we're finally sleeping in. and hopefully Scott won't have to talk to an attorney for a long time.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I think I've warned my family that I will be on every chat room, every YouTube comment, every reviewer, just thanking people for watching it, good or bad. I don't know if you've seen the official YouTube channel, but there's been over 7,000 comments, and I've answered every single one of them.
Scott's a guy.
I feel that I owe it to anybody who even took a chance, you know, even watching the trailer, just to thank them and just to have that conversation. And there's also a lot of misconceptions, because people, rightfully so, are nervous about a movie that has animals in a circus. And so I always like to make sure and explain to them, there are no animals in the circus. There are only humans who are performing in the circus as animals. They ate a cookie, I think my July 25th on, I'm going to probably be busier than I am now. Just, I want to know after all this time, Tony's been through this. He's an old hat at this, but yeah. I want to know what the reaction's going to be, and I feel like I need to experience that with the audience. There's 200 million subscribers. So I'm assuming I'll be responding to at least 200 million, comments.
He'll be like the Forrest Gump of producers, like walking and traveling around the world just to thank everybody for their support of animal.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I watched the film. It is fun. You have a great voice cast. The Blunt Krasinski combo is perfect. The animation is really nice. The story gets you. There's a fun aspect. There's an emotional aspect. And it's finally here, and I'm so happy that it is finally here. I am so glad that it worked out for you guys, maybe greater than it ever could have been, to have somebody like Netflix on board to support you guys with this movie out there. Animal Crackers, July 24th. And the fact that families get to watch it during this time right now when many are stuck at home needing content, it's a perfect win-win situation, I think, for everybody. Animal Crackers, July 24th on Netflix. Tony Bancroft and Scott Christian Saba. This was great to know every detail on this. And if I, next time I see Emily, I'll tell her about this. And next time I see Gilbert, I will say, Gilbert, it's finally here. It's here.
Like, for goodness sakes, it's finally out. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Guys, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the LCJ Q&A today. This was great. And all the best wishes to you. And I will be thinking of you on July 25th.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. For more, go to lights-camera-jackson.com. Follow me on Twitter at LCJ Reviews and Instagram at LightsCamJackson. I'll see you next time on the LCJ Q&A podcast.